This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
Welcome to Hot D, the officially unofficial podcast for House of the Dragon on HBO. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And we're back with a little bit of news to talk about. The biggest piece of news, perhaps, that everyone has been waiting for years now is finally out there. It's on the table to be discussed. That's the release date, which is August 21st. And we'll talk a little bit more in depth about this here in a second. But we want to talk about that. We want to talk about some of the other stuff that's going to be happening on television at the same time in the same genre. The biggest one being Lord of the Rings, Ring of Power. Rings of Power? What is the exact title of that? Do you know?
T-Rop. Trop. Yeah, the Rings of Power.
All right. We're going to talk about Hot D and Trop and how they're going to play off each other and play against each other. And who knows? Maybe they'll play nice with each other. But Aaron, what do you think about this release date, August 21st?
I feel like releasing these Hot D updates triggers a massive influx of news, because as soon as we got the recording of the last one, George took to Twitter, took to his blog, said, yeah, filming's complete. That was February 17th. We got a release date pretty quick after that. Still haven't gotten a new trailer, so I guess we haven't got the onslaught. But it's interesting, because we've known for a long, long time that the Ring of Power is going to be released the 1st of September, September 2nd, I think. And them going August 21st really takes it. You know, that was kind of like a little bit of a nightmare scenario that we'll talk about here in a bit. But like, that's an aggressive move, because Rings of Power is 8 episodes, House of Dragons 10. Now, I don't know if HBO or Amazon is going to do something goofy like release 2-3 episodes to get the prompt primed, or if they're going to release 2 a week. That's more of like maybe an Amazon move. But if assuming they just do 1 a week, which is kind of the standard for both of these platforms, their finales are going to go head to head same week.
Great.
Yeah, I think
so. You think that's intentional by HBO, or was it just like, let's get it out a couple weeks before and it happens to end on the same week?
I don't know. I think it's an interesting move, because it's something that in these shows are going to be compared anyway. And maybe that's the what they're playing for. But this, like, especially invites comparison, right? Because, you know, we've done before on entirely unrelated shows, like who won the week, when we've had 3 good prestige shows at a time, like who had the best week of television. You're going to get that every single week. And my question is there enough interest to sustain both? Because there's many instances in American, you know, pop culture history where you've had similar projects square off. I'm thinking Tombstone versus Wyatt Earp, The Matrix versus Existence, Armageddon versus Deep Impact, A Bug's Life versus Ants, Turner and Hooch versus K-9. These are all movies that came out within months of each other that had the same theme, and almost always one of them does much, much better. Because, like, let's say that you think Tombstone's like a 97% Western cowboy movie, and Wyatt Earp is like an 85%. Wyatt Earp still comes off bad in comparison, right?
Sure.
If you have a decent thing and then something's a superior version of that, and your eyeballs are watching both at the same time, it seems risky. It seems risky,
especially if you're Amazon spending, from what I hear, $500 million on a season of television. You don't want to be like the 85% to House of the Dragons 90% and come off as like worse, significantly worse, right? Like, even if your show isn't.
That's true. I feel like House of the Dragon has a much better, like, if I'm a fanboy or a fangirl of both franchises, I feel like I want to be a hot D one, because you can always go back, like, well, if Lord of the Rings is fucking amazing and House of Dragons is a little bit less, you can always say, well, you spend $3 to R1, then you're going to see that on the screen. But if Lord of the Rings comes across as the inferior product, oh my God, there's no place to hide.
Right.
You know, you are expected to win and you failed. But yeah, I can think of one instance where very similar material came out within months of each other, even on the same platform, and both of them did well. And that's The Boys season 2 and Invincible season 1.
Okay.
Both of those hyper-violent, anti-hero, superhero type material that cover a lot of very similar ground. Both of them were extremely well received. Both of them were renewed easily. Both of them had passionate fan bases. You did have one animated versus one live action. So you got a difference in medium, but that's about the only one I can think of when something has come out and one is seen as, and it doesn't have to be the first to the market either. It's just one is seen as better than the other, and the other seems to be an aftermarket or an afterthought rather.
Yeah, definitely. They're going to be compared. And I don't even know if it's fair to compare them. Like, as someone who's not a big fan of high fantasy, I'm certainly more interested in House of the Dragon. I really like the Lord of the Rings movies. I'm not a super fan of Lord of the Rings. I've watched the movies. I've never read the books. Liked the movies, but it's high fantasy, right? It's an action adventure type stuff. It's not deep inter-character drama. And that's what I come to Game of Thrones for, is how is this all going to play out between characters and factions? And I'm looking for drama in that. I don't expect nearly as much of that from the Lord of the Rings series. But then again,
yeah,
I'm not a big fan, so I don't know the lore behind this section of Lord of the Rings.
And as a Bald Move insider, that was the first thing I kind of like went, ugh, because like I know you and I know your appetite for high fantasy and having two. And like, let's make no mistake, Hot D is going to be a higher gear of fantasy than Game of Thrones was on average.
Oh, sure. With a bunch of dragons roaming around. Yeah.
Right. Like, I think with a casual fantasy fan is going to, these shows are going to be kind of confusing. You're going to have a bunch of crazy character names. And to the extent that, you know, Game of Thrones had, you know, people are referring to keep people as Sean Bean and the shifty guy from The Wire and, you know, incest brother and incest sister. You're going to have that times 10 because you're going to have all these people with crazy fucking names with very similar content. I think it is going to be confusing. And I do worry about maybe if someone had the appetite for one. I'm thinking of people like you. I'm thinking of people like Bill Simmons, the people that don't like the quote unquote people walking through the woods type of genre. Having both of those seen as must see television, having to ingest 2+ hours of that per week. I do get nervous. There's enough appetite to go around, especially when you think that like these are going to be swerves from people's expectations of the core material. Like Lord of the Rings, the movies, in that setting, yes, it's very magical and you've got Balrogs and all this other and ring wraiths and all this stuff. But in comparison to what you're going to see in the Rings of Power, that magic was very much in decline. That's a story of the ascension of man who is going to push out the rest of the magical world. The elves are in decline. Hobbits are in decline. Magic overall is in decline. The world's becoming less and less magical. Versus the Rings of Power, where the elves are going to be the reigning supreme, mankind is envious upstart, there's just much more mythical times. It's Old Testament Bible versus New Testament.
So if you like filigree, I guess you'll be happy, because boy, those elves love it.
If you like autumnal themes and vernal color schemes, are going to be super happy. And then Game of Thrones, you got the opposite problem because, well, I guess, no, it's a similar, because in Game of Thrones, you had this universe where magic had gone out, you know, it completely waned and it was undergoing a subtle rebirth that didn't even really fully manifest until the end of season 1. versus Hot D, House of Dragons, where dragons are just a fact of life. They're going to be, you know, a couple dozen of these things in existence. They're the bedrock of political power. They are the nuclear strategic weapons of their time. You have no shit witches and warlocks serving as political advisors. You know, I might have the hand of a king that's going or a master of whispers that's going to like do divination and shit like that. Is that less interesting than the scheming of Littlefinger and Varys? I think for a lot of people, it might be, you know,
it might just less. Yeah.
So
I can certainly excuse dragons just saying like, oh, they're a creature, right? Like they don't have to necessarily be magical. Like you could see a rain of fire makes case for dragons not being magical, right? Oh, they got these glands and they shoot fire and they just like live in these places, whatever. I could see them being creature, but yeah, when you're talking about divination and stuff like that, it starts to get pretty magical pretty fast.
And no matter how you look at it, Matthew McConaughey shirtless, still magical.
That's a creature. Yeah,
that's a fucking creature.
Creature. let me say this. I think like I'm looking at this as a podcaster, right? Someone who is going to devote their entire week to these two shows full time, with maybe like a movie podcast or something in between. I think it's a little easier to take when it's literally just as a viewer, you sit down and watch 2 hours of television in a week. I think it's not as hard to swallow if you can passively engage with this stuff.
As the lore master part of this podcast, that's something that adds into my intimidation level, because it's already a lot of pressure to keep up on all the lore, the deep lore of the Game of Thrones universe, the world of A Song of Ice and Fire. You talk about the Tolkien side, or Tolkien side,
right?
That's something I haven't really been into for 20 years. So I'm going to have to really bone up on that simultaneously while I'm boning up on my Fire and Blood history. I think we're going to have some help in that regard, which will be news to come in future updates. But it is intimidating. I do really want to do a good job. You know, the spoiler stuff was a big part of the success of our other Game of Thrones podcast. And I don't want to disappoint people, but I also don't want to alienate a whole bunch of passionate Tolkien fans, because I'm certainly that. Yeah. It's just I'm rusty at it, and it's tough. It feels like I'm gearing up. Either cross country skiing or expert marksmanship is tough enough, but I'm gearing up for a fucking biathlon here.
Yeah,
I'm gonna be my Balrogs and on my back pocket. I'm gonna be skiing on dragons, and I got to come up this target and start. Yeah, it's gonna be tough. So we've got these different like storytelling and release philosophies. There's also a competitive production philosophy between the two outfits. You alluded to this. The Rings of Power's philosophy is essentially spare no expense.
Yeah.
You mentioned this $500 million that comes from a Vanity Fair deep dive that they did earlier this the year, where they estimated the total cost of season one to be $465 million divided by 8 episodes. That's an eye-watering $58 million per hour of television. Especially when you compare to Amazon's previous fantasy project, Wheel of Time, which had a modest $10 million. Still expensive by any TV budget's stretch of the imagination. An increase of, I think it was $6 million per episode in Game of Thrones season one. And on top of that, if you paid attention to the reviews and kind of general thought on Wheel of Time, it was perceived as kind of shaky on the special effects. Some of it was great, some of it wasn't. Some people blame the pre-production design versus the actual execution of it, but it was seen as kind of like disappointing / goofy. And Amazon, you know, is pledging a 5-season $1 billion commitment to the Rings of Power. I mean, obviously, a lot of this $500 million is like pre-production work that's going to be taken advantage of for all the seasons. You know, if you create an elf fortress or a dwarf fortress, you're going to be seeing that probably for many, many seasons. The costuming, the weaponry, the hiring all the artists to pre-visualize all this stuff, coming up with the 3D models. there's a lot of like upfront costs. So it's not like $465 million that's going to be every season hints. But this is an incredibly expensive show. And you compare that to House of the Dragon, where HBO is very upfront about intentionally limiting the production cost to under $20 million per episode. Yeah, and so that's like a third. Yeah, and that's still seen as a pretty big increase because the last season of Game of Thrones cost HBO about $100 million per season. You know, with six episodes, that's still around, what, $15 million per? But this, it's still an increase, but it's compared to what the other guys spend in they're really, it's not near the scale. So I did read an article where a Game of Thrones or a House of Dragon production insider who remained nameless, this is an off the record comment, they mentioned that HBO has just gotten so good at these big science fiction shows, and they cited like Westworld, his Dark Materials, of course Game of Thrones. They've got so much in-house production expertise that like they've got economies of scale. Like instead of artists being like, Jesus Christ, we don't know how much it's going to cost to depict a dragon flying over a field and setting it on fire, it's something that they've got in their wheelhouse. It's something that they can better estimate. They're not going to waste money trying to come up with techniques and things. They've got those things pioneered. Do you buy the economy of scale argument, or is this kind of like bravado in the face of $60 million episodes on the other side?
I'm trying to remember what they were spending. Weren't they spending like half that on episodes for Game of Thrones? Weren't they talking about like $10 million?
Yeah, the stats episodes? I saw that the last two, the last season of Game of Thrones cost $100 million. And that was true of the last three seasons. But so that was like, I think, 6, 7, and 10 episodes.
Okay, so they were spending, you know, probably approaching $15 million per episode. I don't know why that it would be the case that $20 million would not be enough to get this done. I know there's going to be more effect shots, right? More dragons means more effect shots. But if they're upping the budget for this thing, I don't know why. Because I was not dissatisfied with the production value almost across the board on Game of Thrones. So
this is true. That wasn't the problem the final season.
No, God, no. There were a couple of rough shots, but basically everything looked great. I don't know why adding $5 million couldn't get the job done per episode.
I think the House of the Dragon, the Hot D, is going to be a bit more grounded than the Rings of Power because, you know, Tolkien is a little bit higher fantasy. There is much more, even though you've got the promise of several dragon battles. The way Martin writes is, you know, it's much more political intrigue and character based stuff. And yes, you will have like a set piece battle or two this first season, but it's not going to be like wall to wall the way that like over on the Tolkien side. You know, if you want dwarves and elves standing together, that's a fucking effect shot that's going to have to be composited every single time. You're going to have fake ears on people. You're going to have whereas it's a lot more modest, you know, almost Shakespeare in the Park type of budgetry on the other side. If you just want a Targaryen to stand next to a Stark, you don't have to go to blue screen to make that happen, right? You don't have to force camera perspective and synchronize camera moves and things. It is interesting. I noticed that the per episode cost of Stranger Things, it's another thing we have public information. The Wall Street Journal released that the per episode cost of Stranger Things is $30 million. Oh. So House of the Dragon, and that's still like a lot of things we say about, you know, I think that's still what I would call that more grounded. You know, it's a period piece, but you know, you can go to Goodwill for most of your costuming, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of shocking when you say that's $30 million. I don't know, man. I'm looking at like big budget movies to get like an idea of dollars per minute of film, essentially. Like if you look at Infinity War, right? The big Avengers, one of the big Avengers movies, Marvel spares no expense on their stuff either. The Infinity War movie had like a estimated budget of $325 to $400 million. And that's just over 2 hours of footage. So like when you say, okay, they're going to spend almost $500 million on 8 hours of television, I think that's not so crazy. I mean, yeah, you're not going to have the box office results of like $2 billion coming in from
And that's what Marvel I was going had, to come back like, with, yeah.
But all the tie-ins for merchandising and stuff, I feel like, look, Amazon, say what you will about them, but they do invest in the future of their company a lot. And it seems like this is their big play to get people to notice Amazon Prime in a big way. And if they can spend $500 million to get 100 million new subscribers to Amazon Prime, that's totally worth it for them. And I mean, that's a big goal. I don't know that they'll necessarily get there with this, but I could easily see the justifications going on behind the scenes at Amazon to make this all work out.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
I do feel like they're going to have to really lean on that merch, and that's something that I don't know that I've seen Amazon do that well. Like, yeah. Where is the boys merch? Where is the Expanse merch? And it's insane because that's their thing: is they make shit and they ship shit. And if someone's doing a better job, they'll have an Amazon Basics version of that thing. Yet they're just completely flat-footed when it comes time to doing the merch. In fact, the best Expanse merch to date has to be bought off the Amazon platform because it's other people doing third party versions of it. It's kind of insane. What do you think about? What do you think the odds are that Amazon's going to release Rings of Power once a week? I think that's 100% what HBO is going to do. I don't see them even releasing two at the top.
No, probably not. I think it's very high, almost 100%. Yeah.
What do you think the impact of having dueling finales is going to be then for the season?
Well, okay, so here's the thing. Amazon typically releases their shows late Thursday night or Friday at midnight.
Right.
Which means it won't necessarily be impacted too much, from a scheduling perspective with Game of Thrones coming, or sorry, House of the Dragon coming out with its final episode. I think it's definitely, like you said earlier, going to encourage comparisons. There's no way around that. But as far as like scheduling goes, I think they'll be fine. You know, give people 5 days to digest Game of Thrones. They'll be waiting. They'll be eager to see your Rings of Power on Thursday night.
Yeah, I think there's two ways it'll go. One is the most fun way is if both of these shows are matching each other blow for blow, like every single, like you're heading into the penultimate episode and everyone's super on board and super exciting. And then it's just like, you know, it's kind of like the difference between watching a very close sporting event versus a blowout. The worst is going to be if one of them are just, struggles for the first few episodes, is kind of a confusing mess, and it's just kind of like a ass-kicking blowout. That's going to be a bad time for whichever fan base would find themselves on the side of that.
Yeah, and I guess the third option there is not quite as bad if both of them suck. Neither of them looks particularly bad next to the other, but
yeah, you'll have subreddits and forums and Twitter threads full of fellow miserable people. Because that's the thing, like if one of them is kicking the other's ass, just like in real life sporting events, the victors are going to be coming and rubbing the salt in those wounds, They're going to be making fun of the knife ears. They're going to be making fun of the hot D. Who knows?
My hope is that Hot D is the better of the shows, or that they're both excellent, because, I'm definitely rooting more for Hot D. That's
oh my god, you fool! You're revealing your bias this early. Yeah. Oh my god.
Yeah, I put all my cards on the table here.
I can honestly say I have the completely divided loyalties. As a younger man, and I'm going to say up until my early 30s, I was 100% Lord of the Rings. I was not an early adopter of Game of Thrones. I started watching it when the show came out. But since my, like, I, you know, Lord of the Rings is kind of, I thought the Hobbit trilogy was complete shit.
It's kind
of a waste of time, a complete wrongheaded approach to material. And it's been Game of Thrones supremacy. And of course, Game of Thrones also fumbled the ball on the 1 yard line, but I still like have a lot more affection and, I guess institutional lore still in my brain kicking around for the Game of Thrones stuff. So I hope they both do well. I hope it's a return to form for Middle Earth and frankly, Westeros. They both are coming into this with slightly tarnished reputations from the material that fans have seen, you know, the last material that they've seen. I got a couple other things. We're in this situation where they've had the release schedule. We haven't had a new trailer. There hasn't been any new casting news or filming shutdowns. There's not any breathless reports of new locations and stuff. So I did find a report from Screen Rant by James Hunt. This was published earlier in April, April 5th, where he cited the dearth of dragons in the official posters, the teaser trailer, the other pre-marketing materials that's been released. Specifically, he draws attention to the emphasis on cracking eggs' nest, and he took this into some kind of theory that this means that don't count on a lots of dragons being in season one. What do you think of that take?
Okay, so the little bit that I do know about the story here, that might be a decent guess. I think, like, as we get more embroiled in the drama of the main story, we will certainly see more dragons going at each other. So, yeah, season one might be light on dragons, although I don't think it'll be devoid of dragons. I don't think it's like a Khaleesi wandering in the desert with her dragon eggs for two seasons. I think there will be dragons around. We just won't see, like, heavy dragon fighting action early on.
I think this take is stupid. Like, I mean, and it's probably, you know, you can't blame people that haven't read the books, but I mean, the dragon, like, why would you expect to see dragons that require the most post-production in any of these trailers when they haven't even finished filming yet? Like, I didn't see any really special effects in any of these things because they're not done yet. You know, what you can see is people on a set. You can see people walking around outside, but you're not going to see dragons swooping around. I actually think there's going to be certainly one, probably two, if I had to guess, based on where I think they're going to break down the first season, jaw-dropping dragon set pieces. Or at least they're right there in the Fire and Blood book. So, in fact, George Martin himself disputed that characterization in a blog post just last week from April 29th. He says there's going to be plenty of dragons and battles to be sure, but the spine of the story is still the human conflicts, the love and the hate, the character drama rather than action adventure. And honestly, that made me feel better about the situation because I think that's what went wrong late stage Game of Thrones. They completely abandoned the intricacies of characterizations and plot and scheming in favor of just battles. And it even those battles were great, the stakes weren't there and the story suffered.
It really depends how they break this story, right? Like, are we going to see the story really kick into high gear early, or are we going to have to wait a little while? But dragons will probably be ever present on this show, I have to imagine.
You know, when I go to do these updates, I go to Google News and I put in House of the Dragon and I hit search and I was gratified to see Bald Move mentioned as a source for some breaking news. If you didn't know, Maester Anthony, who's been keeping our seats warm doing the Electric Boogaloo Game of Thrones coverage, he had on the linguist from the Game of Thrones project, a guy that invented essentially all the High Valyrian, Low Valyrian, Astaporian, Dothraki, David Peterson. He had him on the podcast. If you're not keeping up the Electric Boogaloo, you might want to check that one out for sure. That's the March 7th edition. It's the Game of Thrones Boogaloo bonus Boogaloo, where they're talking House of Dragon and more. this, I'm actually going to cite Winter is Coming's Daniel Roman quoting our Bald Move podcast, because that was one of the many sites recovering it. Peterson said there's a lot more dialogue. He had to, he was called on to do a lot more fantasy dialogue than he's expecting. There's a lot of very well-written dialogue, he described it, which really challenged him as a translator. He said, even though he's worked on many languages on Game of Thrones, that High Valyrian is the only language he had to do in the first season of House of the Dragon. But he said, even though there's only the mono language, the sheer volume of High Valyrian that he created for season one of House of the Dragon is more than he did for any other season of Game of Thrones in total. Hmm. So if you are a fan of fictitious languages, you're going to have a treat here. Because he pointed out in season 3, 4, and 5 that a lot of the stuff wasn't High Valyrian. A lot of it was like Astaporian dialect. And then starting in season 6, like there was hardly any call for services at all. But he also mentioned that there's one particular character that he had to do a lot of tricky High Valyrian dialogue for. He says, there's something I was dealing with in the House of Dragon because there's one character who, as he is speaking these lines of English, he speaks in a very different way from the other people he's talking to. Not necessarily less formal, but perhaps more flippantly. I really want to be able to capture that in the Valyrian. And he decided that's one of the challenges. Like he could see how to do the, you know, he could see the lines as written in English, but trying to catch that same idiom and feeling in High Valyrian, he had to invent a bunch of stuff. I wondered when he's talking about that, who he could be talking about. The two that seem to be people's consensus is the Rogue Prince, Daemon Targaryen, played by Matt Smith, former Doctor Who actor, or Corlys Velaryon, the Sea Snake, the kind of Han Solo roguish character played by Steve Toussaint. So, yeah, we'll see who is the flippant High Valyrian when that comes out. The other thing is Anthony asked him, like, just his as an artist and a fellow creative, what his impressions were of the scripts. And he said it's very difficult to read a script and tell what it's going to be like when you see it on screen to see if it's going to be good or not. It's very, very difficult. He says he's had experiences where I've read things and I thought they were really great. And then they played out a little prosaically on screen, and he's had the complete opposite reactions where the script essentially says, okay, this happens. And when I see it, I'm like, wow, that's really cool. But he said, what I know about this series is the parts I've been involved with, the writing that I'm reading is better than anything I've ever worked on. Outside of the likes of Penny Dreadful, which for me is my favorite show that I've ever worked on, just reading it, it's really, really good. He says, it's one of the things that made it feel like a little bit of an extra challenge. Like, Jesus, they're not phoning this in. And it really makes me want to bring my A game. So, I mean, what do you expect the guy to say? Right. And also, some people might like Penny Dreadful. Isn't that weird Frankenstein Monster Mash thing on Showtime? Don't sleep, especially on the first couple seasons of Penny Dreadful. I think it kind of fell off when they were forced to wrap everything up in like a rushed final season. But that show was good. And I think most of the work he did on there is there's like this demonic like language that he invented. It's a satanic language that Eva Green was always spitting. So there's someone who's read the scripts and says it's the best thing that he's ever worked on, including Game of Thrones. So, you know, again, what do you expect him to say? Ah, it's trash. It's trash. I just ran it through an online Valyrian translator and called it good. But, I guess I'd rather hear him say it's good rather than like non-committal, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, the carryover from Game of Thrones is I never had a problem with their dialogue. That wasn't what let the end of that show down. So, yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, they didn't conjugate their Valyrian verbs correctly, and it just really destroyed it for me. The only thing else I think I've got left to talk about is how are we, as we're getting a little closer, and I know people have been asking us, how are we going to cover this hot D with a fig leaf of coverage? How are we going to do it?
Yeah, well, it depends. It depends strongly on whether or not we get screeners for this show, and it'll be interesting too, because just because you get some screeners doesn't guarantee you'll get all screeners for all episodes, so it may change mid-season, but we have a couple of plans, And you might be familiar with the no screeners plan. In the scenario that we can't get them and we have to watch the episode, God forbid, on Sunday night for the first time, we'll do exactly like we did on Game of Thrones. And if you've been with us for a while, you know that that means an instant talk or an instant take podcast immediately after the episode ends, which means we will get on the microphones and record our thoughts. We do it live on YouTube for club members, and we take that portion, which is the instant take podcast, which is released for everyone, and we combine it with an instant talk, which is an audience Q&A kind of thing where they ask questions and we respond to them. We package that with the instant take and release it to our club members exclusively. So we'll do that just like we normally do. And then Tuesday we'd have our full episode review of the episode. And Friday we would have out a combination feedback and or spoiler kind of take if the episode warrants it.
And that's spoilers. The thing, like, and I don't, because I'm kind of the spoiler guy. I don't really have a lot of interest in rehashing a bunch of Game of Thrones theories, but it could be that some new shit comes to light about the Targaryen ancestries that blow the lid completely open on some of the crazier theories about how, you know, Game of Thrones is going to end, or Song of Ice and Fire. Because that's still, you know, George has got at least two books that he says he's going to release one of these days. There could be some implications there. But I don't know, because like I certainly don't want it to be like, well, this week is this happened, and next week we've read the next three or four pages in Fire and Blood, so we think this is going to happen.
Right.
I don't want it to be that. But we'll see. We'll see how much it's like you said, if the show warrants it, if the feedback warrants it, if there's stuff besides, you know, the old same old that we've talked about again and again and again. Because again, there has not been any new information. Martin hasn't released anything new. The show's been off the air. There's not like I don't know what the theory crafters are doing out there. It's they're starving. They're starving and dying in the streets.
Yeah,
so I think
maybe he's holding a book back, another volume of House of Blood or whatever it's called.
Fire and Blood. Man, I don't know. The man's not holding much, but he's writing video games. He's writing other series and movies. And it's
some Native American thing. I don't know. I don't know what he's doing out there. But yeah.
Yeah, I saw that. Dark Omens, or I forget what exactly the new show he's working on. But it's not Winds of Winter, as far as we can tell.
No.
But
three podcasts a week is pretty much guaranteed, right? Whether we get screeners or not. The only thing that's going to change with screeners is instead of doing a live instant take podcast immediately after the episode ends, we will get together before the episode airs, watch our screener copies, and record our instant thoughts then. And we will take the video and audio that we record as the instant take and screen it on Sunday night after the episode comes out. So, and then proceed to answer the questions just like I described before in the Q&A session and turn that into the instant talk. It'll just be essentially a time delayed instant take. And it'll look very similar from a listener perspective. It'll look almost identical to us doing it without screeners.
It's on the only changes that allow us to get a little bit more, a little bit more in depth and a little, not in the instant take, because that'll be what it is, but it'll allow us to get the main cast that comes out, and we might be able to get it out a day early because we'll have all of our notes and stuff ready to go. And Monday will just be kind of like research and seeing other people's opinions and what we missed. But the other thing is, like, I do think we have a good chance of getting screeners. We've tried over the years we've been doing this to get on the HBO screener ecosystem. Mm-hmm. This year, for the first time, we got our foot in the door with David Simon's new We Own the City. We've had full screeners for that. So I'm very hopeful that we'll get, and maybe we won't get the final one, because I know a lot of the Game of Thrones seasons past, the last episode or two, or maybe even three, critics did not get. Mm-hmm. And then we'll have to adjust our coverage for that. But I'm hoping that this just means essentially you guys get better content quicker. It allows us to kind of time shift our watching and things like that, which is nice. But I think that does it. Yeah, I don't think there's anything else that we have to talk about. I'm hoping we do get screeners, but maybe we won't. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see.
Anything else we want to talk about?
I don't think so.
All right. Well, here's us flipping the keys back to Maester Anthony. He has, I think, one more season. This is going to be a supersized season. He's going to be doing two episodes a week. He's got, I think, 13 more chapters to get through with Game of Thrones. Although I'm not sure if he decided on doing one big mega season or if he's going to do two smaller, kind of like Stranger Things, Better Call Saul, mini season split in half. Either way, we'll be at the other end of that with another update. Hopefully, I'm really hoping we get another new trailer.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Them being complete to footage and them doing full blown post-production, we should start seeing some of that dragon stuff.
And we'll see, how many dragons you got in this first season.
Yeah, we'll see. And like I said, it's going to be fun. These great fantasy franchises going mano a mano, dragon a drago here in the fall. So that's our plans for Hot D. That's what we got coming down. I hope you do stay tuned to Maester Anthony's because he's got a great podcast. Lots of great stuff. Breaking Game of Thrones news. Breaking Hot D news. We'll see you in a couple months. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
Later.